All opinions expressed by Davidson Capital Management on MoneyWise are solely theirs and are based upon information they consider reliable and is subject to change without notice. You should be aware of the risk in investing in any security or investment strategy discussed on the show. Before acting, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and should seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. Got your MoneyWise guys back inside the MoneyWise studio with me for this weekend show. I have my brother Jeff, Joe Rust, and I'm your host, Kyle Davidson. For any new listeners to the MoneyWise program, Davidson Capital Management is a fee-only registered investment advisor. We're in our 35th year of business, and with offices in San Antonio and Corpus Christi, we have your investment management needs covered throughout Central and South Texas. And if you'd like to learn more about us, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your MoneyWise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. As we kick off every weekend's MoneyWise program, I turn it over to my brother Jeff to go into the numbers from Wall Street from this past week. So, Jeff, take it away.
Okay, in the week just passed, the Dow Jones Industrial Average was down about 921 points or 2.4%. The S&P 500 last week was down about 81 points or 1.6%. And the NASDAQ last week was down about 73 points or one-half of 1%. Now, for the year-to-date, the Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 0.8%. The S&P 500 year-to-date is up 7.4%, and the NASDAQ year-to-date is up 7.8%.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
So
Dow is flirting with going negative for the year.
It is up 0.8% year-to-date. You know, and I was just looking at the technical charts, and as we were coming to the end of the first quarter with the S&P 500 hitting all-time highs of 5264. And since then, as of the close Friday, we've seen about a 2.67% corrective move. Now, I've seen and read in the past historically that the first half of April historically is kind of a down part of the month because we're coming up to tax season, which everyone's taxes are due. Just a reminder, on Monday, April 15th, the tax man cometh. And our federal government needs every tax dollar you can pay to be spending it frivolously for all the different pet projects across this country.
Gosh.
Sorry, I had to throw that in there. I just wish I had a snare drum with a cymbal so I could do a rim shot on that. But April 15th is tax day, and with the close on Friday, the S&P was flirting with closing at or below its 50-day moving average, but it was able, saw some little bit of buying coming in right at the end on Friday to get the S&P to close just above its 50-day moving average. Now, I will say, just looking at the technicals and the volume, there hasn't really been any conviction buying or conviction selling, because we've seen volumes well below the daily moving average all year. So, you know, we could see a churn in and around here where the market takes a breath, and this is normal in a bull market.
So would you say, based on the volume numbers, that the buyers are sitting on their hands? Are they on strike right now? Are they waiting to get more data, much like our friends at the Federal Reserve? Sorry, Dad, I had to say the words Federal Reserve for
the first segment.
Well, hey, look, we're 4 minutes into the segment, and that's the first time I said the words Federal Reserve. But the big news of the week wasn't necessarily the Federal Reserve. It was what happened with the CPI numbers, the Consumer Price Index on Wednesday, which then brought a whole lot of Fed speak into a whole lot of pundits' mouths. Yes, Kyle.
Well, to answer your question, just looking at the volume on both the sell and buy side, it just seems that the buyers and sellers are just kind of in a holding pattern because we're not seeing huge spikes in volume, and it's definitely below the daily moving average. So there's not really any conviction. There's just some churning, and some of that could just be related to the algorithms. Because if we know that close to 60% of daily market volume is done by computers with no human intervention, it's just the algorithms trading against one another based on the news feed that it's receiving. And of course, as you just alluded to, we definitely had some news this past week, primarily on the inflation front.
Well, I would say that there's probably a lot of portfolio managers, us included, trying to figure out if they need to change their asset allocations based on what appears to be the new narrative. Remember, we started the year with some pundits expecting 6 interest rate cuts, and the Federal Reserve was more like half of that. And it took until about late February, early March for the rest of the market to decide, well, okay, maybe it isn't going to be 6 this year. Maybe it is going to be closer to 3. And then boom, we have February, we have the February
January,
and the March,
February,
CPI numbers, and the CPI numbers hotter than expected. And now the outliers are saying, well, we might get another interest rate increase, and there might be more people on the outlier. Well, we heard a little bit about this from a Fed governor the 2 weeks ago, and now with this CPI number that came out in the week just passed, I think there's more pundits talking about, could that be a possibility? I'm still not in that camp. But I, you know, now to me, I don't see any interest rate increases, cuts until after the election. You know, June's off the table. You know, September, they're not going to cut interest rates less than, you know, 6 weeks before the election. They're not going to do that. So to me, if there's going to be an interest rate cut, despite even did we hear President Biden this week was saying there was going to be an interest rate cut sometime this year? I swear. So they were reporting on that, wondering why is the president getting into this talk? I'll have to go look it up over the next break. Did you hear that, Kyle? Did you hear that, Joe?
I did not hear that. Yeah. But anything he could say to try to salvage his horrible tenure in the White House, he's going to say, whether that's buying votes with paying off student debt, or someone floating the idea that certain ethnicities don't pay taxes. I mean, it's just absolutely ludicrous. Anything the Biden administration is grabbing and reaching for to try to do better in the polls and to try to maintain power, they'll promise anything under the stars and, of course, miserably fail at delivering. Because a lot of the Biden administration decisions is what's continuing to cause the higher inflation that we're seeing. And when we see the CPI numbers that came out this past week, and one of the contributing factors to the hotter inflation was gasoline prices because of the horrible Biden administration energy policy, you know, that's a contributing factor. And then as we've talked on this program about the housing statistics, I know we're coming up on a commercial break, but I'll just make this last point. I read this past week that the Fed is using data that's not only 12 months old, but could be up to 18 months old. So let's pause right there. We'll pick up this conversation on the other side of our first break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So if you're just tuning into this weekend's MoneyWise program, continuing to recap the happenings of Wall Street from this past week, before we went to break, I was just talking about the hotter CPI number, Consumer Price Index number. And one of the kind of the three biggest contributing factors to the hotter CPI number was housing,
car insurance and fuel for the overall CPI number. Now, the thing that's interesting is the same day, fellas, that they talked about car insurance being a contributing factor to the hotter CPI number, guess what I received from my insurance agent? I got my monthly bill at a higher rate than what I paid the month before.
I know homeowners is more.
My homeowners, it didn't double, but it was definitely in the high double digits increasing as far as homeowners insurance is concerned. But I haven't calculated my car insurance, but it was definitely a double digit increase in my premium. Yeah, Jeff.
And do you know, with the Fed rate, if the Fed was to keep maybe raise interest rates again, which is, to me, I don't think that's going to happen. But if they were to do that, do you know how much that would affect car insurance rates premiums, or homeowners insurance premiums? Nada. Zero, zilch, nada.
Yep.
Because raising or lowering interest rates have nothing to do with premiums being charged by the insurance, being charged by an insurance company. So
that's right.
Everybody that buys insurance is going to get hit with that. My wife and I went out for a very simple dinner at one of the big chains. We hadn't done it in a long time. We couldn't even get out of there under $50. $50.
Mm-hmm. Try going to Whataburger. Go to Whataburger, get three meals, and you're over 30. Well over 30. Now, Whataburger, and I love Whataburger, don't get me wrong. We all love Whataburger. But this is across the board. Anywhere you go, it's elevated prices, and it really comes down to when it's time to go into the into the voting booth. It's, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Is it easier to live today than it was 4 years ago? And the answer is simple.
If you're going to vote, and all I know is one thing: this relief act or whatever for college loans that supposedly Biden is trying to push. All I know is in 1991, I want my $10,000 that I had to borrow.
Okay. That's right.
So I'm expecting that check, by the way, and if I get it, Biden, you got my vote. So,
I mean,
daughter had student loans that she paid off. I mean, there's got to be maybe as many people that paid off student loans that still owe money on student loans, wondering where their check's going to come from.
Best friend paid off a couple hundred thousand dollars in medical school loans.
Or how about all the parents or all the kids that paid for their own college out of their own money, mm-hmm, and worked? And so the folks, mm-hmm, that didn't, that got loans, now those loans are going to be forgiven?
I heard a statistic on Friday. $153 billion of taxpayer dollars has already been spent on forgiving these loans. $153 billion. Because he finds these little programs. The Biden administration finds these little teeny tiny programs that they can make adjustments to in order to get around the ruling from the Supreme Court last year about canceling student debt. And so then now they're doing the next round.
So let's jump off the political box.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
No,
it is the season.
All right,
we're not making investment decisions based on the.
I understand. I understand.
Of the moment. So we've had now. I think the Dow is down
almost 1,000 points.
Almost
1,000 points.
No, 1,000 points this week. I think it was down. Almost the same the week before, but I have to go back and check my records. But really what I was more driving at is with the Dow on the cusp of going negative for the year, and here we are 3.5 months into the year, this really feels like is the beginnings of a more deeper correction. Now, a 10%, ladies and gentlemen, a 10% correction in any given year is normal. We had one last year at the end of the third quarter going into the fourth quarter. We're not, as Kyle had said in the first segment, I think the S&P
2.67
is not even down 3% from its all-time high. We got the real meat and potatoes this in the week coming up of earnings. We've had a little bit of bank earnings on Friday, which weren't well received, though the earnings themselves looked fine looking in the rearview mirror. But looking forward, the guidance was a little lacking for investors' taste, and J.P. Morgan got taken out and spanked a little bit.
But it was also the highest flyer. It was also the highest flyer of all the banks. Okay. It's one of the best performers. And from a fundamental standpoint, the highest scoring fundamental bank that we have in our proprietary screener, JPM.
But
we don't own it.
Would it also be fair to say that Jamie Dimon, the CEO of Chase, wasn't saying a lot of kind things?
I'm sure he's upset with the administration, and I'm also with these CEOs in this current environment where there's these big unknowns and it's so data dependent. Why stick your neck out when it comes to forward guidance? Why elevate the bar if you don't necessarily have to, and you have scapegoats to keep your bar lower so it's easy for you to step over it? You know, why not set that up for yourself? Why set the bar so high in these data-dependent, driven environments, particularly revolving around the Fed?
Well, the things that he was talking about are some of the things that some pundits, and maybe us might be included in that category, are topics that the market seems to have been kind of ignoring. He was talking about, this is Jamie Dimon, warning Friday about quote-unquote persistent inflation, quote, terrible wars and violence, and finally the Fed's effort to tighten financial conditions threaten an otherwise positive economic backdrop. Now, the market this week seems to have had some reactions to the quote-unquote persistent inflation, otherwise known as sticky inflation. But the markets really haven't said – to me, I don't know that they've really quantified in any way the continuing wars that's going on in the world. You know, most of that's been ignored. Now, would it be ignored if the Israelis are actually preparing this weekend for a attack by Iran? Did y'all hear that? They were preparing for – now, if the Iranians actually did that, do you think that the markets would necessarily react to that positively? I bet we'd see oil prices, start to march up even more. And what does that mean? Higher gasoline prices. And what does that mean?
More inflation.
Higher inflation. Stickier inflation.
Stickier inflation.
Yeah. Right. Stickier inflation. But again, that's laid to the feet of horrible energy policies from the Biden administration. Well, if they'd never gone down that road, we wouldn't be finding ourselves in this position. So this is their level of ignorance and stupidity.
Did Jamie Dimon say something about 8% interest rates? But he didn't clarify what he meant by that, I'm assuming.
Yeah, is that 10-year, 2-year? I mean, what are we talking about? He just pulled that number out of the air. Was he talking about mortgages? I mean, he didn't specify, like you said, Jeff, what he meant by that 8%. And so, talking about the sticky inflation, we have been rattling off about this on our program for more than a year, probably going on more than 2 years, of this 2% mandate. The Fed needs to wake up. I don't think we're getting back to 2% anytime soon, if ever, because this 2% mandate, I think in my personal beliefs, was created during a time period where interest rates were held artificially low by the Federal Reserve, and we're at this zero interest rate policy. When that's not realistic, to have a 0% overnight rate by the Fed. And so if PCE is run at 3.2% historically, again, and so I heard more and more this week pundits saying, we got to get away from this 2%. It really needs to be 2.5%, 3%, maybe even above 3%. And if it's at 3%, that's much more of an attainable number. But let's all not forget, the Fed has tools. You know, if the economy does slow down, which it hasn't as of yet, or if employment comes to a screeching halt, which it hasn't yet, they do have tools to create that Fed put, the backstop to the economy, which in turn is more or less a backstop to the stock market. And what I've seen in the technicals, for all intents and purposes, in this 2.67% down move in the S&P is normal, and it's also been very orderly, very, very orderly on very low on below average volume. So nothing to get feathers all ruffled up for. Well, let's take our next commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. You Money Wise guys, will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation or take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the MoneyWise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So if you're just tuning in this weekend's MoneyWise program, continuing to review Wall Street from this past week, Joe, I know there's a point that you wanted to add on from that last segment, so take it away.
Well, we were talking about numbers, and you're talking about the S&P, and you look at portfolio management. And I was just... And we were given the numbers for the year, and essentially the Dow is essentially flat. Well, if you look at active management and how are we managing the portfolio, the three of us sat down at the beginning of the year and said, all right, we're going to create a portfolio that's GARPY, or growth at a reasonable price. And one of the decisions we made, if Kyle and Jeff, y'all can recall, is one of our value ETFs. We decided, you know what, this isn't the right environment to own, what, SHD. Value. And that particular ETF is up a whopping 0.85%, while if you're buying the S&P or you have the Qs or you have a GARPY portfolio, you should be outperforming if you're equally weighted growth and value, which is what a lot of Monte Carlo's the R2D2 portfolios would tell you to be. And I just wanted to point that out because we were going over numbers. I'm like, you know what, we got to talk about value. Kyle always talks about the value trap, but this is why you want to take a look at active management, look at your portfolio, and make sure it's allocated properly based on the current market environment.
So. Well, and not only active management, but experienced active management and understanding in certain economic and interest rate conditions, certain asset classes perform better, during those time periods, such as small cap. You know, we have a very, very small allocation of small cap, but small caps typically do better in a falling interest rate environment because a lot of the funding that small cap companies, small market capitalization companies need to do from a financing standpoint and their interest carrying costs. So in a higher interest rate environment, it costs them a lot more on their balance sheet. And so some of the conversations and portfolio strategy review sessions we've had is talking about even eliminating the very small, very teeny tiny percentage of small cap allocation that we have because we had it in anticipation of falling interest rates this year, which very well is, you know, has a high probability of still happening, just not right at this time. So for that time period, until we get closer to interest rates making a turnaround on the Fed making their first cut, we can deploy that money elsewhere to provide it some capital appreciation for just that very teeny allocation we have in small caps in our portfolios. But this is where experienced active asset management comes from. It's not shotgun blasting your assets across every single asset class under God's green earth. You know, in hope, which is a bad four-letter word on Wall Street, that it works out. That's the big difference. So great, great point, Joe, that you bring up.
And you look at your big dividend payers, and I was having a review with a client today that had a pretty significant position in a dividend paying stock for certain reasons. And we've gone over that before. You know what I mean? And there's a time
the dividend
for that
trap.
And a time not for that. Yeah. So you have to take that with a grain of salt and make sure, you know, you're being vigilant about what you're doing in your portfolio, especially if you're paying a fee to have it managed. If you're paying 1% or whatever, what are they doing for you? What have they done for you lately? So anyways.
And I wanted to add on to that point about the value trap, because I actually had this conversation with a client and in Round Rock via email a few weeks back. And he was talking about back in the day how he had a much more dividend concentrated and focused portfolio. And I've done some portfolio reviews where you can see these dividend focused portfolios, because there's kind of, I feel that there's a little bit of miseducation out there for retirees thinking that the only way I can derive income from my investment portfolio in retirement is I have to do it through interest income and through dividends only, not understanding that money's coming to you from your investment portfolio in retirement can come from realized capital gains and capital appreciation, can come from dividend income, can come from interest income, and it could also be a little bit of your original principal mixed in there as well. And so, you know, working with a client right now in the process of transferring assets over out of Houston, and the portfolio that her husband, who's now deceased, had was, it was just obvious. It was all dividends, and not paying attention to the underlying fundamental value of the company that's paying that dividend. Because what's the point of getting an 8 or 9% dividend income if you have 20, 30, or 40% or more of capital depreciation from your original investment? And then you also have to be wondering why they're paying such a high dividend. Is it because they've kept their dividend payments the same, but the value of the actual stock, the price of the actual stock, has plummeted precipitously? And so if they keep that dividend constant, it, again, the dividend yield looks a lot juicier than it actually is. And so you have to be very careful with this. You have to pay attention to fundamentals and not just get dazzled by high interest rate investments. And this is the same point of non-traded real estate investment trust, which I've, new client out of Houston again, a different client, you know, has a situation where they're locked in into a non-traded real estate investment trust, which is kind of the second thing in line that a financial salesperson will try to sell an investor. First is an annuity. If you balk at that, then let me go to a non-traded real estate investment trust. They're going to dazzle you with this high interest income. And this one particular investment, and I've seen this in all the non-traded real estate investment trusts I've come across, these high initial dividend income that can gets reset typically a month or two after you buy the thing. And in this new client's particular instance, has lost 62.2% of their original investment. And it's also going to take us possibly years to unwind this position in their portfolio because of the non-traded, non-liquid issue that you find in non-traded real estate investment trusts.
There's also private credit type products out there that are also being sold, where you're basically pooling your money with other investors, and that money is being loaned out to less credit-worthy private companies. These are mostly private companies this money is being lent to, and they can have the same kinds of restrictions on withdrawals, the same types of long tie-up periods, and big fees big fees for the sponsors that are out lending the money, as you know, in addition to the big commissions that are being paid by the organizations that are selling them. And we see most of these being sold by the we call them brokers in a box, meaning they're brokers that have broken away from from a previous bigger institution and gone out on their own. And we see these sold constantly by these folks that are still acting as brokers, but they're not affiliated with a big brokerage firm. They basically hung their shingle out on on their own. And we see a lot of that being, you don't really see those types of products per se being sold at the bigger brokerage houses or the Edward Joneses or the Ameriprises. You see it for folks that have gone out on their own. Because I had a client last year that just had a whole portfolio full of these private placement REITs that bought storage facilities or other commercial buildings, factories, commercial, lending to those types of real estate. But I've also seen private credit also becoming we hear a lot about private credit on CNBC. There's all these firms out there you know, raising all this cash to you know, go out there and lend at higher interest rates to less creditworthy organizations that couldn't necessarily get loans from the, you know, standard, you know, regular commercial bank, and they go out in the private sector to borrow it. And, you know, there's risks involved with this. And the one thing that as a near retiree or already someone that's retired, you know, trying to stretch for yield in your portfolio can have detrimental effects, especially when it comes to liquidity. And you know, we only invest at Davidson Capital Management in investments that are fully liquid all the time. We don't invest in these types of products that offer these advertised quote unquote high yields that never really seem to materialize. That have all these if, ands, and buts, and all these ways that they can tie up your money and not give it back to you when you want it. That liquidity is just as important as portfolio construction, whether it be security selection or asset allocation. And if you have a portfolio that doesn't have high liquidity, you're asking for trouble. If something happens and you need to get your hands on the money, and all of a sudden you find out you can't get your hands on your money, well, what's the use of having these quote unquote high yield instruments if I can't get my hands on my money when I need it? Yes, Kyle.
And I know a client that has been with us for years. He and I worked for over 4 years to unwind one of these non-traded real estate investment trusts. Took us 4 years. Every quarter had to fill out paperwork, had to have it signed, had to have it notarized, and had to send it in to the board of this REIT, and then they had to anoint how many shares our client was allowed to liquidate on a quarterly basis. And that luckily, this was just a percentage of their overall net worth, and it didn't cause any kind of hiccups in their retirement. But the bottom line is, don't get dazzled by yield. You have to dig deeper. So let's take another commercial break. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. You Money Wise guys will be back after this. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. If you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, take advantage of a portfolio review and analysis from your Money Wise guys, you can reach us in our San Antonio or Corpus Christi office toll free at 1-800-275-2162. If you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the Money Wise podcast through Apple Podcasts or any of your favorite streaming podcast apps, where you can leave your comments. And don't forget to like the show. So in our last segment of the first hour of this weekend's Money Wise program, got into some more investor education that last segment. You know, I know at the beginning of the show we were talking about the 2.67% so far down move, or I'd say corrective move, that's occurred so far in the S&P. And in any given bull market year, a 10% corrective move in the market is completely normal. And as I said earlier in this program, nothing to get feathers in a ruffle for, because let's also not forget there's still $6 trillion of cash sitting on the sidelines. You know, and eventually that cash has to find a home. I'm not saying it's all going to find a home in the stock market, but I know for ourselves, we are still not at our maximum allocations to stocks. And I know throughout this year, we have been waiting for some type of pullback to make some adjustments in our allocations, make a adjustment and a rebalance. I know conversations we've been having this week and work I've been doing in the portfolio is making some adjustments to our portfolio's index base. And make some adjustments there. And so now we're just looking for the opportunity to do that. Because in my feelings are this, the Fed is eventually going to be cutting interest rates. The timing of it, I think, as we're getting the consumer price index information, even though the PPI, which we didn't talk about at all this show, was better than expected. The producer price index was better than expected. We also know the contributing factors for the hotter consumer price index, and one of the biggest components is real estate. And I read an interesting story this past week from the National Association of Realtors head economists stating that the Fed
is actually kind of their own worst enemy when it comes to higher inflation because of their interest rate policies. It's causing the continued constriction in the housing market, and that they just need to go ahead and start cutting rates, which will in turn help bring inflation down on the housing side, which represents 40% of the consumer price index.
And so it's kind of,
you 100% disagree from the head economist from the National Association of Realtors. Okay.
Oh, I want to hear this.
I 100% disagree, because if they cut rates, and all of a sudden, all these buyers that have been sitting on the sidelines start to flood into the market, and the houses that are up for sale, you're gonna have more buyers, and not and are we gonna have this mass influx of people starting to sell their homes? I don't know. I could see
home, to trade up.
Hold on, I could see home prices actually going up if interest rates go down. Because what we're seeing right now is we're seeing home prices being cut because people aren't buying, you know. And it's ladies and gentlemen, all real estate is local. So I'm sitting here in Corpus. The situation in Corpus is such that anything over $500,000, according to my real estate contacts, isn't moving. What's moving is 250 and under. That's moving fast. 500 and up, it's not moving. We got neighborhoods full of homes that I watch on Zillow that have had price cut after price cut after price cut that are still over $500,000, and the homes aren't moving. Now, is that because we're at 7% mortgage rates, or is that because the buyers just think that the home prices are still too high and we're just going to sit on our hands? So if the Fed's not going to lower interest rates, in my opinion, until after the election.
I don't necessarily disagree with you.
We're basically probably now to one rate cut. And 0.25% rate cut ain't going to mean diddly squat for the real estate market. No.
Totally agree. But
it's the sentiment of it, the fact that they're now beginning the process, can be beneficial for the stock market as long as we don't have a significant economic slowdown. But as we've said on this program, is that the Fed is reactionary. They're not going to be proactive.
Exactly.
They're not going to be proactive, and they're moving very, very slowly. But we've also talked in past programs that there's this lull period between the last interest rate increase and the first cut. Historically has been very positive for the stock market. So right now, with this low trading volume that we've seen so far this month, tells me that the market is just biding time. It's taking a pause, kind of a pause to refresh. Because of the four-month run that we've had to the upside.
4 months is longer than that. You got to go back to the – it's more like –
I'm saying since – okay, going since – we're going since October.
Yeah, it's more like
– let's say six, 7 months.
Right, 7 months. To me, the buyers want to hear what the earnings are. And to me, the earnings have to be perfect.
And their guidance has to be perfect.
Meaning,
the key, Joe. That's one of the big deals.
Maybe it's like today or Friday with the big money bank centers, you know, beating the top and bottom on the top and bottom line. But what's their guidance going to be? Are they going to be conservative with their outlooks? Are they not going to even was it 2 or 3 years ago? Some of the mega cap companies, they weren't even giving their guidance because of the situation.
Apple was one of them.
It'll be interesting. Yeah. Stay tuned. Get your popcorn ready because will matter.
No guidance is going to be no stock gains if a company comes out and does that. So it's to me, the buyers are on strike. The buyers really need to have some really good conviction. It's going to be a stock by stock situation. You know, overall, the markets, to me, given now that we've had these 2 months in a row of higher than expected inflation, is the narrative about all these interest rate cuts is out the door. And all these portfolio managers that built their portfolios with the assumption that we're going to start having interest rate cuts in the spring or summer, now they got to rethink their allocations. They got to rethink not only the allocations, they got to rethink the stock selection too. They also got to rethink their bond portfolios. We hadn't said diddly squat about bonds yet, really this year in this week's program. I'm looking at the Bloomberg U.S. aggregate government bond through Thursday, down almost 3% for the year.
and we have had conversations that are
– We're 3.5 months in.
And we've talked – we've had conversations in our strategy sessions about increasing some allocation to either some U.S. you know, government paper or to continue
well, that's
to
been our number
ease
one
in.
Performer. That's yeah. our number one performer this year, these government bonds that we bought last year and built this – and they're coming due this year. I think it's starting in June is the first. We have like June and July and August, September. We got all these maturities coming up. So we may be adding some of that here.
Well, and the other last thing I want to say before we go to the top of the hour break is we also could see the market since the beginning of this month repricing now with the idea that we went from 6 rate cuts to 3 to 4 rate cuts, now maybe 2 to 1 to 0, and the market is just repricing in here, and some allocation shifts are occurring from these managers that have first anticipated 6 rate cuts that we're definitely not going to be getting this year. So we'll wait and see. With that, we're coming up the top of our break, so we'll take the break, go into the news, and when we come back, we'll be diving into the second hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program and continuing with investor education. Stay tuned, and we'll do that after this. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. Your MoneyWise guys will be back after the news.
All opinions expressed by Davidson Capital Management on MoneyWise are solely theirs and are based upon information they consider reliable and is subject to change without notice. You should be aware of the risk in investing in any security or investment strategy discussed on the show. Before acting, you should consider whether it is suitable for your particular circumstances and should seek advice from your own financial or investment advisor. Past performance is not indicative of future results.
Welcome back. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. I've got my father, John, my brother, Jeff, and I'm your host, Kyle Davidson, and we are diving in to the second hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program. Now, if you'd like to learn more about the MoneyWise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday, you can reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you have an investment-related question or topic you'd like for us to discuss here on the MoneyWise program, you can send all your emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com.
If you missed the first hour of MoneyWise, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Click on the radio show link where you can listen to today's show as well as past MoneyWise programs. You can also subscribe to our iTunes feed by clicking on the blue note in the upper right-hand corner of our homepage at davidsoncap.com.
Thank you, Jeff.
You're welcome.
So being in our second hour of this weekend's MoneyWise program, a lot of times we like to reserve the second hour for investor education. And I found an interesting article that came from the Market Watch from the Wall Street Journal titled, Five Things Every Retirement Portfolio Should Have. And for any longtime listener of the Money, or for any longtime listeners in the MoneyWise program, you know that we definitely love our lists, our countdown lists here on the MoneyWise program. And so I thought this would be a good article to go into, because I know looking through all five of these things that they're saying that what the writer of this Market Watch article is saying that every retirement portfolio should have, I know that we can definitely add our 2 cents and increase the level of investor education provided in this article. So looking at number one for the five things every retirement portfolio should have, and number one being consistent income. And I know that we have talked for years now here on the MoneyWise program, the lack of consistent income, or I should say decent income for retirees, particularly those that have higher levels of fixed income inside their portfolio because of the historically low interest rate environment that we have. And what we have discussed on this program many times before is to not necessarily be completely focused on fixed income as providing that consistent income. And that there are there's a multitude of higher dividend paying stocks that can produce consistent annual income, but also give you the upside potential of price appreciation of the individual stock. And kind of some of the go-tos in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and I know, Dad, you've talked many, many times on this program of the dogs of the Dow. And to explain to our listeners the dogs of the Dow again.
The dogs of the Dow are the at the beginning of each year, they identify the 5 or 10 highest dividend paying stocks in the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and they become either the 5 dogs of the Dow or the 10 dogs of the Dow. And the theory is you own those 10 stocks for the year, or 5 stocks if you're going with a small dog, and they will outperform the Dow Jones Industrial Average, and you'll receive consistent income.
And then, and there again, if you also get price appreciation over the time that you own that stock, it's just extra icing on the cake. And again, when you look at the dogs of the Dow, when you see the 10-year Treasury yield where it is today, majority, if not all, of the dogs of the Dow are having an annual a higher dividend yield than that of the 10-year Treasury in this current time. I know we haven't seen the list of the dogs of the Dow here recently, but the first stock that always pops up into my head is AT&T.
Well, AT&T is still number one.
And I just actually looked at it a couple days ago, and it's right around a 5.4% dividend yield.
Well, you can say it's more than 5. I think it had a pretty good day on the other day. So
yeah,
it is something over 5%. But the one thing I would say about this, Kyle, you know, the 5 things that we're looking for here in a retirement account, a consistent income. Now, in days gone by, obviously you would get your consistent income from the bond portfolio. And that was true from the time in the late 70s all the way through the financial crisis back in 08. But because, as you said, because of the policy that the Federal Reserve has been following, which is basically a zero interest rate policy, this has brought all bond yields down, and therefore people who could have got consistent income from their bond portfolio, they can get consistent income.
I was going to say,
the problem is it's not a level at which they can be retired.
That they can survive on, unless, and as we've talked on this program, if you're one of those lucky few that has a portfolio with asset sizes so large and your income needs so modest, and you also don't care about that pesky little thing called monetary inflation taking away your purchasing power, then, you know, you could look at having a majority of fixed income in your portfolio and be okay in retirement. But there's just so few and far between people and investors that are in that position. So bonds will still, like you said, Dad, provide that consistent income. It's just most likely not going to be at the level that's going to sustain you in retirement. And so that's when you have to look at diversifying your portfolio. And the first place to look to create that income is higher dividend paying blue chip stocks like an AT&T. And the first, I would say, really one of the first best places to go would be to track down the dogs of the Dow for any given year.
That's the easiest place to begin. And these are all household names. So I think a typical bond investor would feel more comfortable in some of these names than names that they're unfamiliar with.
Okay. So, again, 5 things every portfolio retirement.
I want to add a little bit of something to that.
Okay.
Because here, especially since the financial crisis, there have been a real focus among some investors on high income and focusing on stocks like master limited partnerships or illiquid privately traded REITs or REITs in general. There's been a real focus of buying some of those types of securities and just ignoring when they go down in value. Many of the mesh limited partnerships, some of the REITs had large declines in values and saw their yields go up. And for whatever reason, the investor that held those securities was just focusing solely on the income and not really concentrating on what's happening to the value of the security. And having a 12 or 15% yield is all fine and good, but there's a reason why they're yielding 12 or 15%. Maybe you bought it when it was yielding 8, and now it's gone down 20% or 30% in value. And so, yeah, it's all fine and good that now it's yielding 15%, but if you've lost 30% in principal value, what have you really made? You've made nothing. You've actually lost money. That's not as common as we're seeing now when reviewing client portfolios, but we know that was an issue very much in the past, and we pointed that out to a lot of investors, and a lot of investors lost sight of the fact that you can actually have declines in values in some of these higher-yielding names. And one more thing before we go to break is that dividends on stocks in the current tax environment can be treated more – there's a better treatment of taxation – on those dividend paying stocks than you might otherwise get interest on bonds.
Okay. Well, let's take a commercial break. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. We'll be back after these words. Welcome back. You're listening to MoneyWise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the MoneyWise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So we're continuing this hour on the five things every retirement portfolio should have. Number one was consistent income. And Jeff, I'm glad you brought up right before we went to commercial break the REITs or real estate investment trusts and these master limited partnerships and some of the portfolios we've reviewed where the prospective client has been glowing about such a high yield and high return that they've been getting in income, right, but not paying attention to the value of the actual original investment and the principal devaluation that they've had. And I've said, I've actually seen this when I've talked to somebody that said, oh, Kyle, look at the great 10, 15, 12% dividend yield I'm getting. And I said to them, but you've lost 50% or 75% of the value of your original investment. And then I see the look come over their face saying, oh my gosh, I just realized that I was, like you said earlier, focused on yield and not looking at the total overall picture. So for any listener that's in these types of investments, you know, pay attention to the underlying value of your original investment, because it's not worth getting a 10% dividend yield if you've lost 50 or 60% of your original investment. And then also for the real estate investment trust, the illiquidity issues that we have been running into,
right,
during portfolio reviews that we've done here at Davidson Capital Management, you have to read the fine print in every prospectus. As we've always said, if it takes 100 or 150 pages to explain the investment vehicle you're getting ready to buy, you should not only get up, but you should get up and run. So,
Number two. Five things that every retirement portfolio should have. The number two item is preservation of capital. Now, there has been really, especially here since 2013 and the big gains that we had in 2013, there's been this obsession in the media with trying to call the top, and that, oh, you know, this is it. It can't go any higher. We'll data mine all these statistics to find statistics that fit our argument that says that you should be getting out of stocks now because they've had this tremendous run since March of 2009 when the financial crisis basically ended and this bull market run began. And there's just been this obsession with folks needing to, in essence, board up their portfolios, get ready for that coming storm, get ready for that hurricane that's coming. And, you know, preservation of capital is certainly something that every investor should be concerned about. But it doesn't mean that you should go out and you should completely liquidate your portfolio every time, or within a month or so, of every time the Dow or the S&P or the NASDAQ reaches an all-time high, because that doesn't necessarily mean that that's the all-time high for the portfolio. The way that you preserve capital to us is you have a balanced portfolio. You have a portfolio of stocks, you have a portfolio, and in that same portfolio you have some bonds and you have some cash. So if one asset class, say stocks, is not having a particularly good day, usually that means that bonds are having a particularly good day. Or if stocks don't have a particularly good quarter, usually that means that bonds are having a good quarter. So one will offset the other in some respect, not dollar for dollar, but most folks that had big losses and that suffer big losses in market downturns don't have portfolios that are too highly allocated to one asset class, whether it be stocks. And what's getting ready to happen, and what started in 2013, for those investors that had high allocations to bonds, they thought that being invested in bonds, if they got out, say, in the heights of the financial crisis in 08 and 09, and they went to their financial professional and said, I want out. I don't care where things are valued at. I don't care where the markets are. I don't care what the news is. I don't care what the Fed's doing. I just want out, and I want out now, and I want all my money in bonds. And they were, and they've probably felt fairly good through 2009 and 10 and 11 and 12 because interest rates were falling. And so they were seeing the value of their portfolio go up. Now, stocks went up a lot more than bonds, but then you get in 2013, and suddenly this preservation of capital goal of owning fixed income, because that's how I'm going to preserve my portfolio. I'm never going to have to worry about this again because my financial professional told me that if I own bonds, that I wasn't going to lose any value in my portfolio. Wrong. 2013 comes along, and these investors that had high allocations to fixed income found out that, yes, you can lose money in bonds.
And one other thing I wanted to add to that, Jeff, you know, again, talking about a balanced account. I mean, David's, you know, we're in our 25th year of business, and our philosophy from day one and will continue to be the philosophy for 25-plus years to come is that of being a balanced manager. And when we talk about being a balanced manager, we're not talking about going to a portfolio and saying, okay, Mr. or Mrs. Client, 60% of your money is in stocks, 40% of your money is in fixed income and cash, and we're going to set it and forget it. That is not what we're talking about, and we do not advocate that in any way, shape, or form, even for our listeners that are potentially managing their money on their own. When we talk about a balanced account, it's an actively managed balanced account to be able to make adjustments when adjustments need to be made, just like we do as professional money managers for our clients here at Davidson Capital Management. You know, there are certain market conditions where we want to be a little more overweighted in stocks than we are in fixed income, like our current conditions right now in the interest rate environment, where we have some of our highest allocations to stocks and our minimum allocations to bonds in the history of our firm right now. But then also when the winds and the tide shift and it's time to have more fixed income exposure because we're in a more normalized interest rate environment, then that's when you need to make your adjustments. It's not just about setting it and forgetting it in a balanced portfolio. You have to be actively managed in order to be successful over the long term. And if there's one kind of statement that I use with prospective clients and our clients here at Davidson Capital Management that I'd like to convey to all of our listeners, is that the way to build long-term wealth in a portfolio, it's not how well your portfolio does in up years, it's how shallow you keep your hole in down years. And here's just a quick mathematical example. If you lose 50% of the value of your account, and I know we've run across some folks here that have come through our front door that have been in that situation, if you lose 50% of the value of your account, you have to make 100% return just to get back to where you started. That's why keeping your hole shallow, being in an actively managed, balanced portfolio is what's going to help build long-term wealth in your account. And if you don't feel that you have the competency to do that, then you need to go out and search for a competent, registered investment advisor, someone that has discretionary control that can actively manage those assets for you to help protect your portfolio over the long term. So, number two was preservation of capital. Number three of the five things every retirement portfolio should have is liquidity. And boy, I don't know how many times we have had this conversation with prospective clients over the years here at our firm. And liquidity is something that I want each and every one of our listeners to think about, particularly those listeners that have traditional pension plans. And for listeners that are thinking about retiring in the short term, in the near term, and have been out doing their research of what financial professionals they possibly would want to be working with as they transition into retirement, who are shoving down your throats annuities. And any longtime listener of the MoneyWise program knows our absolute disdain for annuities of any way, shape, or form. And also, in essence, when pension recipients decide, you know what, I want to start receiving those monthly payments from my pension, you have now turned those assets that you've worked your entire career to build in that pension into an annuity. But guess what these two things don't give you? They don't give you liquidity. And the pension topic is a topic I've wanted to have here on the MoneyWise program for quite some time now. We always seem to be running out of time, and I know we're coming up to the bottom of the hour, so I'm going to say as much as I can before we go to the bottom of the hour break and come back. I'll continue my thought. But any listener of our program that is lucky enough to have a traditional pension where it's growing and building value and it's going to be there when it comes time for you to retire, the one piece of advice that we have given our prospective clients through the years of service that we've provided is it's always the best idea to gain control of your assets at retirement, meaning not taking the annuity payments from a traditional pension. Because once you elect to take those pension payments, and let's just say in this example, you decide I'm going to be receiving $1,500 a month, that is what you're going to receive for the life of that payment schedule. Now, if you decide that you want to receive your pension in a single life payment, that's going to give you the biggest monthly payment. But guess what happens if you pass away the next year or 6 months after you make that decision? If you're married, your spouse receives nothing. And if you have children, your children receive nothing. And those assets that you worked your entire career to build goes right back into the pension, is redistributed to other employees in the future. That's if you choose the single life payout. Now we're coming to the bottom of the hour break, so when we come back from the break, I want to go into the other payout options that retirees have in pensions and why you should be, if you have the ability to take a lump sum distribution from your pension, you need to be doing that in order to keep your liquidity. And we'll do that after this. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. Your Money Wise guys will be back after the news. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about the Money Wise guys, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday, you can reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So continuing the five things that every retirement portfolio should have, number one was consistent income, number two was preservation of capital, and before we went to the bottom of the hour break, we were talking about liquidity, and I was taking a little sidebar discussing pensions, traditional defined benefit plans that still quite a few listeners of the Money Wise program are lucky enough to receive or have the ability to receive pensions. This whole discussion is really going out to you, and the piece of advice that we give prospective clients that come through our door is that if your pension allows you the ability to take a lump sum distribution from that pension, to take it, because that then gives you the liquidity, but it also gives you full control of those assets that you possibly spent 25 to 40 plus years building and earning over your career. And so before we went to break, I was talking about the different pension payouts and some of the drawbacks of them. So we talked about the single life payout. You start receiving that payout, something happens to you, God forbid, 6 months later you pass away, nothing goes to your heirs or if you're married to your spouse. So that's not a very good benefit, but it gives you the highest monthly payout. Option number two is a survivorship benefit. So again, the payout's going to be less than option number one. And so if something were to happen to you, then it would go to your spouse. But here's something you need to think about under that option. God forbid something happened to both you and your spouse in a common incident, then guess what? Nothing goes to your heirs, and those monies are then redistributed to other employees that are part of that pension. Then a lot of times you have a third option. And there's multiple options, but I'm going to touch on the top three. Then option number three is you have a survivorship benefit, and then past that you have a beneficiary benefit. So if something were to happen to you and your spouse in a common accident or incident, then your beneficiaries would receive the remaining balance of your pension. But again, your monthly payout would be less. And you might be thinking, well, Kyle, those are three pretty good options. Why wouldn't I go that direction? Well, here's something you also need to keep in mind with all three of these options. Once you elect to receive that pension, in this example, let's say it's $1,500, that is what you're going to be receiving for the rest of your life or for the rest of these payout elections that you've made. Well, there's something out there called monetary inflation that a lot of folks that feel this high level of comfort and security with receiving this monthly benefit check from their pension don't realize is that $1,500 you're receiving a month every month that goes by, that $1,500 buys a little bit less. Now imagine receiving that payment for 20, 25, 30 years. I can assure you 30 years from now, $1,500 is going to be buying a heck of a lot less than it can today. And so someone who's a pension recipient who's thinking about annuitizing and taking that monthly payment needs to think about what we just discussed, but also monetary inflation eroding the purchasing power of that check because they're not adjusted for inflation. And you have to keep that in the forefront of your mind. That's why we always recommend to take the lump sum distribution, the cash option distribution, and put that money to work for you because it gives you the liquidity, it gives you the access, and it gives you the ability to pass those assets down to heirs.
And what if you, let's say you take the election and you're 62 years old, 63 years old, in a couple of years you're getting the $1,500 a month, but something happens when you turn 65 and you need more than $1,500 a month.
Yeah.
Can't do anything.
Can't do anything.
Or how about this? How about the total opposite? How about if you have, usually when you retire from an organization, you might have a traditional 401k and a pension. A lot of the refineries here in Corpus Christi have two parts to their retirement. Well, let's just say you have enough in your 401k to live off of in retirement, and you don't really need to touch the pension. Well, let's say you just let that pension money accumulate. And you didn't make, and you elected to just have it all rolled into one account. You put it to work. You don't have to start taking distributions from even your 401k or your pension retirement until you reach the age of 70 and a half under current law. So flexibility. And that's not one of these, one of the...
It should be liquidity slash flexibility. That's right.
And by committing yourself to a stream of payments, no one knows what's going to happen in their life 10 years from now, 20 years from now.
A year from now,
a year from now.
I mean, 6 months from now. Life can change in the blink of an eye.
So why tie your hands into something? Why make a decision right now that could affect you a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years down the road? You're just reducing your flexibility by committing yourself to taking a pension payout in the form of payments, which is in essence an annuity. They don't ever call it that.
I know.
Which is very interesting. It's not when we see the paperwork and we advise clients that come to our office, it never says annuity. It's just this is going to be your payment for
your heir's life,
for your spouse's life. It doesn't say that this is in essence an annuity, but that's exactly what it is.
Well, and again, the technical definition of annuity is a steady stream of periodic payments. Well, guess what? We have clients at Davidson Capital Management that are taking monthly distributions from the assets we manage and in essence have created a quote-unquote annuity for themselves by not owning an annuity and having full access to their money in case.
Complete liquidity, complete flexibility,
and complete access at all times. And the longest our clients would go without getting their hands on their assets in case, God forbid, an emergency is 3 business days. That's it. And so this pension conversation, again, goes right in line with annuities, and it really, again, adds to our disdain to annuities. And as Jeff said, you know, taking those monthly payments, you're handcuffing yourself. You're handcuffing yourself, and you're not giving yourself an out. And so we highly recommend before any decisions like this are made to pick up the phone and call us to at least receive an education on what your options are. Because I can tell you this, and I've run into this with a couple of our clients, Jeff. Some companies that provide pension benefits do not advertise that there is a lump sum distribution option at all. They do not discuss it. I know one of our clients in Houston, our client had to make a phone call and put the hot coals to somebody on the other end of the phone before they finally admitted, yes, sir, you're correct. We do have a lump sum distribution option. But on all the paperwork that I assisted our client in filling out prior to his retirement, didn't say it anywhere.
And it ought to be against the law for employers to mislead
absolutely
their retirees that option's not available to them. And the reason that they do it is they want to keep as much money in their pension plans as they can so that the corporations that make corporate contributions into the employees' pension plans, by keeping more money in it, they don't have to contribute as much as a corporation, which improves their profitability.
That's right.
And so there's a incentive for less than full disclosure to occur when it comes time to retire.
That's right.
It's not very common, but it does happen.
It does happen. So, again, five things every portfolio retirement should have. Number one, consistent income. Number two, preservation of capital. Number three, liquidity. And you know, Jeff, flexibility.
Yeah, flexibility. And kind of maybe reiterating what we'd said in some of the previous number one and number two about liquidity and the private placements are one of the biggest violators of liquidity.
Yeah.
We've especially private placements sold REITs. We've seen a lot of them sold since the financial crisis, and the rules have actually changed since we really started talking a lot about them. They're required to report, you know, the change in value of those private placement REITs, where in the past that they weren't really supposed to. If you're signing up for an investment and it has a 200-page prospectus, you need to start asking some hard questions to the person on the other side of the table about how liquid this investment is. And if you can't get your money out of it in 3 business days or less, then you have to really question whether this is an investment that you should be in. A lot of these private placements and a lot of these private placement REITs especially, you can't get out of them for up to 3 to 6 months after you put in a request.
And actually, I've read on the front page of prospectuses for these private placement real estate investment trust or REITs, in bold letters, now granted the print is about an 8-point, so it's almost microscopic, but it's in bold, and it says that this is not an actively traded security, does not have an active open market for liquidity, and liquidity can be significantly and is significantly reduced. And Jeff, I know you have personal experience with clients here at Davidson Capital Management where it took our client almost 6 months to receive benefits back from a private placement real estate investment trust that was purchased. So you've been around the block a few times with these.
In the 25 years we've managed money, we only invest in securities that are publicly traded, that you can look up online, that have a symbol, whether it's a mutual fund, whether it's a stock, whether it's an exchange traded fund, whether it's a bond. They're all publicly traded. They're all highly liquid investments. And we would not recommend to most investors, unless you're very sophisticated and you have a portion of your portfolio that we would call your quote-unquote play or Vegas money, that you avoid investments that are not publicly traded.
Okay. So, again, when we're getting ready to take our last commercial break for this weekend's Money Wise program. When we come back, we'll be wrapping up 5 things every retirement portfolio should have. We've done consistent income, preservation of capital, liquidity/flexibility, and we've got number 4 and 5 coming up after this. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to Money Wise with Davidson Capital Management. If you'd like to learn more about us, you can go to our website at davidsoncap.com. Or if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday to discuss your personal financial situation, you can reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. And if you'd like to send us an email, you can send all emails to moneywise@davidsoncap.com. So in the last segment of this weekend's Money Wise program, I want to wrap up 5 things every retirement portfolio should have. So far, we've covered consistent income, number 2, preservation of capital, number 3, liquidity, and then Jeff has added /flexibility. Number 4 is competitive costs. Now, we have talked, oh my gosh, how many? I mean, we're now in our 9th year of doing the Money Wise program here on 1360 KKTX, and we have talked about all the different ways people in the financial service industry are paid, from commissions to commissions paid on products that are sold. And at Davidson Capital Management, as a registered investment advisor, we are completely fee-based. And our max fee being 1% of total assets per year as far as our management fee is concerned, and our fee goes down from there based on assets under management. And the one thing that we always recommend to anyone looking to hire an investment professional is to search out the registered investment advisor that is on a fee-based schedule, not a commission-based schedule, and really pay attention. I know from just looking at our competitors in the marketplace here in South Texas that at Davidson Capital Management, we're anywhere from 25 to 50% less expensive per year when it comes to our management expense. And so that's something that you'd always should pay attention to and understand that when you're working with someone that is in a fee-based structure, a fee-based arrangement, that really puts them in the same side of the table or in the same boat as you, because it gives them the incentive. The more money they make for you, the more money they make for themselves, and then if the value of the portfolio goes down, so does their management fee. So pay attention to competitive costs, ask the questions, and just really read the fine print.
Don't be afraid to ask whoever the financial professional is you may be working with, how much they're going to make for managing your money or selling you a particular product. That shouldn't be a question that you should be afraid to ask. And the person on the other side of the table should not hem-haw around or should not try to deflect the question away, because cost and what you're paying in the portfolio in terms of management fees and expenses, and there's lots of other ways that fees get collected from investors that we don't really have enough time to go through in this last segment of the show, they can add up. And they're not always obvious. And you have to, as Kyle says, dig deeper to figure it out. For folks that are involved with wrap accounts at the major brokerage houses, and they go by different names depending on what brokerage house you're in. Many of those wrap accounts start off at 2.5% per year and go up from there.
That's right.
We've seen many wrap accounts that exceeded 3% of assets under management and don't even get a started about annuities.
Well, I'll kind of leave this number four segment with this. If anyone that you're working with is paid through commissions and you ask them how much commissions they're going to make and their answer is nothing, that's a flat-out lie. That is a flat-out lie. They're not out of the goodness of their heart.
People don't work for nothing.
They don't work for nothing. So keep that in the back of your mind. So the fifth and final thing that every retirement portfolio should have, and again, see this and we talk about this time and time again, is long-term growth. The bottom line is as you get closer to retirement, and as Jeff said at the beginning of this second hour, you can't just board up your portfolio. You cannot say, well, I'm 2 or 3 years away from retiring, so now I'm just going to move everything 100% into fixed income. Now I'm safe.
Yeah, preservation of capital should not overshadow long-term growth.
You always need growth. Whether you're 60, 70, 80, 90 years old, you need some form of investment growth in your portfolio, because that investment growth is what's going to help offset monetary inflation over the long term. That's why growth is so necessary and is a requirement for any successful portfolio. And I will say this. The last few 401ks that I've reviewed for prospective clients, I've been noticing just here recently a trend, especially with how well the markets did in 2013, where I've seen folks that are, you know, in their mid to late 50s that are sitting 70, 80, 100% of their 401k in either cash, fixed income, or the stable value fund, because they feel that, you know what, I've grown my 401k to $400,000, $500,000, $700,000, and I'm not willing to take any more risk, so I'm just going to put it all in the stable value fund and ride off into the sunset, and that is the worst thing you could do.
They're allowing preservation of capital to overshadow long-term growth.
And we've always said, don't be confused with preservation of capital with return of purchasing power. The lack of thought towards monetary inflation is a bad thing that you could do for your portfolio. Not paying attention to that, not realizing that loss of purchasing power is a loss. Well, it's not going to show it on your statement, but it is a loss.
One thing that I think we could safely say as financial advisors is that these days of the CPI running around 2% are just about over.
Yeah.
And we have no way of knowing how high inflation is going to be in the future, but it's definitely not going to be at this level. Another reason to not say, oh, $700,000 is enough, and I'm just going to, as you say, ride into the sun. I mean, that the funny thing is, you think you're playing it safe, you are actually taking a big risk. You think you're being safe when you're doing this, you are not.
And you could be doing long-term irreparable damage to your retirement portfolio. And so if you find yourself in that position, and you might be past the age of 59 and a half, one thing I just kind of quick sidebar to throw into this, if you're participating in a 401k and you're past the age of 59 and a half, most standard prototype 401k plans allow you to take what's called an in-service distribution. And that allows you to roll out the balance of your 401k, hire a professional money manager like a Davidson Capital Management to manage those assets for you while you are still working for your current employer, and also allowing you to continue to participate in the 401k to receive any of the matching or profit sharing dollars that your employer is providing. And we have done this. We have done this with a multitude of clients over the years. But again, it is something that is not advertised by the 401k provider, that you have the ability to do this. So if you're in this past 59 and a half years old, you're not planning on retiring anytime soon, you know, it never hurts to pick up the phone and make a call and to learn about what your options are with your 401k, because if you've amassed $400,000, $500,000, $700,000 or more in your 401k and you're nervous about the future and you don't have the wherewithal to manage it yourself, there could be some options out there for you to hire a professional manager to oversee those assets. So long-term growth is an absolute key. Do not board up your portfolio. You'll need growth in that portfolio for the rest of your life. So with that, we would like to thank everyone for listening to this weekend's MoneyWise program. Again, if you'd like to give us a call in our office on Monday, you can reach us in our local Corpus Christi office at 906-0070 or toll free at 1-800-275-2162. For my father, John, and my brother, Jeff, this is Kyle Davidson saying have a fantastic weekend, and to your financial health, we will talk to you next week.